Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. So here's a number that should make everybody in the travel ball space feel a little bit uncomfortable. The 10 or 11-year-old who's already basically specialized, so they're playing one sport, year-round training, private lessons twice a week, the whole showcase aspect of it, that kid is statistically more likely to end up hurt, burned out, and out of sport before they even potentially even get to high school and get good. So not less, more. And here's the part that should really hurt if you've been sold this dream as a parent or a young athlete, is that the single sport grind probably isn't even making them better at the one sport that you're actually paying for, right? So you're getting sold the story. And there's a multi-billion dollar industry banking on parents believing in this. And so today I'm going to actually pull everything out here for you. I'm going to show you exactly what the research says from a sports perspective in terms of specialization versus development. Talk about what you can potentially do that's going to be the best thing for your child. So if you're new here, welcome to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. I'm a strength and conditioning professional for over 15 years. And I work with youth athletes and do personal training for a living. And I also focus really heavily on educating people about strength, fitness, performance, and anything athletic related when it comes to training. Now, with that all said, I do dabble a lot in terms of the long-term athletic development side. If you haven't been checking out over on any of my social media, I still tease some of that stuff. I'm very passionate about that because as somebody that works with kids for a living, I'm seeing all these things from a day-to-day basis. So not only am I in the space of training athletes, I'm also helping people improve their life, health, fitness, and performance. So if that's something that you like, make sure you always check out any of the other episodes that I have. And also make sure that you enjoy this podcast episode. And before we move on, if you happen to be watching over on YouTube, do me a favor. Hit that subscribe button if you're not subscribed already. I drop videos all the time, especially new podcast episodes and long form content. But also, you can leave a like as well if you are subscribed. That helps the lovely YouTube algorithm. And if you have to listen over on Apple, Spotify, whatever you like to enjoy your podcast, if you can rate the show, that helps me out a lot. Or if you have to leave a comment, share with a friend, all those things help out tremendously. And I really appreciate it. My goal is always to make sure also that you take away one awesome thing from today's content. So if that happens to do that for you at the end of the episode, also check that out and do those things for me. I really appreciate it. Now, today in particular for this episode, we're going to take on one of the more emotionally loaded topics in the whole industry. And that's going to be young athlete development or youth athlete development versus early specialization. And I want to be very clear up front here that this one personal aspect of this for a lot of people. If you're a coach or a trainer, right, you happen to be potentially working with athletes. If you want to be a parent, right, you are getting your kid involved in these things. And so you might actually be financially invested in some of this. And so as a coach, we probably have parents in our ears, or if you're a parent, you have other parents in your ears about they should join this team, they should do this, this is what I think is best for them, da da da. At the end of the day, as coaches or whatever, we've got our jobs to do to make our athletes the best we possibly can. And if you happen to be a parent, right, you want to do what's best for your child at the end of the day. At least I really hope so. And so we actually, as coaches, usually have these kids in front of us every single week. And so we know that they love their sport, right? If they're coming to work with us, they're probably somewhat emotionally invested, but they also probably have things that they want to improve upon. They have goals they want to achieve. They have teams they want to make, right? We want to be able to help them do that. And so I'm not going to just be here to point a finger and get after you and say specialization is bad. I'm actually here to give some more nuance, some more research information on it, and I'm going to give you the things that you could do as a parent or a coach to be able to help families and friends be able to make good quality financial decisions, but also long-term decisions and health decisions for their kids as well. So the thing I also want to make sure I'm clear here as well is that if you are looking for any research that I happen to mention, it's always in the show notes and or in the YouTube description for you, so you can easily find that and actually dig into that a little bit more on your own as well. Now, the first thing I have to do here is restructure the framing and the thought that's here because I do think it's broken. And usually it's going to be development versus specialization. And that's the way that most people are going to argue it and talk about it. And treat it like there's almost two teams that you have to pick, right? Whether it's be specialization or the long-term athletic development side. And another way we also look at this too is the multi-sport training versus the single sport specialization. That's not really how any of this works at the end of the day. And so I want to start off with some definitions, because I think if we have definitions, we have better places to start from and we can have these conversations a little bit easier. So specialization in the research has a specific meaning. So back in 2013, in the research, they defined a quote-unquote specialized athlete with three criteria. They're training in a single sport, they're training or playing more than 8 months in a year, and having quit other sports to focus on that one. If your kid or a kid meets two of these three criteria, then they are considered a specialized athlete. Now, development isn't necessarily the opposite of that. Development is actually really this whole global picture that we're looking at. So we're building the athlete's engine, their movement options and variability, their vocabulary in terms of how that works, their strength, their coordination, obviously their love of the game and the psychology side of it over the course of years, right? So specialization is just a decision that we happen to make within that time frame of development and how narrow we go with that and then when we also choose to do that. So the real question shouldn't really be, should my kid specialize, with a yes or no answer? The real question we should ask is how early, how narrow, or how much volume, and at what cost when we choose to make these decisions. And that's going to be a much more useful conversation at the end of the day. And I think it's actually one that we can use research and injury history and looking back at what other athletes have done to be able to gauge this a little bit easier. Now, I do also have to talk about the elephant in the room here, and that's going to be the massive financial incentive that is pushing families towards early specialization. So the travel teams, the showcase things, the tournaments, the recruiting services, private coaching, year-round investment in some of these teams, that entire ecosystem right there makes more money the earlier that kids get involved and the more earlier that your kid commits to usually that said program or that said sport. Now, I'm not saying that everyone in this eco space is a villain. What I'm saying is that if you happen to follow the money and notice that the financial incentives and the points that what those become around to you as parents or the coaches are noticing these for the athletes is the exact opposite direction in terms of what health and performance data is going to recommend for what's best for these kids. So keep that in mind in the back of your head. Who's profiting off this? Who's potentially making the money, right? How are things going in that side if you happen to just follow the money trail? Now, the first thing I want to talk about is going to be injuries, because this is where the evidence is the strongest and where I want to be somewhat careful as well and make sure we're very clear about some things before we get into this. Now, Janthi's group ran one of the biggest landmark studies that we have here, published in the American Journal of Sports Medicine in 2015. And so what they did was they compared roughly 880 injured young athletes against about 400 uninjured controls coming through a sports medicine clinic. And after they controlled for age and the training volume, and this is the very important part of this, is that highly specialized athletes still had significantly higher odds of serious overuse injury. And by the word serious, what they meant was that they had a loss of at least a month from their sport when that participation, whether it be practices, games, what have you. So specialization itself, independent of just doing a lot and your kid being really active, was a risk factor. Now, the honest part here is that this is a case control and cohort data, right? So it's observational. They're not controlling what these people are doing. They're just seeing what actually happened to go through this particular clinic. And so this is not a randomized controlled trial. And if you think about it, we really can't do that from an ethically perspective, because we can't ask 8 and 9 year old athletes to specialize for a long period of time just to see what happens to their body, and you know, ask other ones not to and see what happens to their body and follow them around for a decade. So when we say that specialization is associated with higher overuse injury, we actually mean it is truly associated, because the relationship is consistent across all the studies that we have and the mechanism makes sense in the long term. But I'm also not going to stay here that we have strict causation, because we don't, because we can't really just do those studies, right? It's not going to be ethically possible and nobody's going to sign off on that. And so the same study that handed us two rules of thumb that are generally useful here are going to be: one, they found that when a kid's weekly hours of organized sport exceeded their aging years, so we say a 12-year-old athlete, for example, is training more than 12 hours in a week, we know the injury risk increases. And then number two, they also found that when the ratio of organized, structured sport against free, unstructured play climbs above about a 2-to-1 ratio, serious overuse injury also increases. So those are two things that we want to kind of keep in mind here. We want to make sure that their training hours, whether it be practices, games, specialized stuff, whatever it is, should be underneath their age. And we also make sure that we actually protect the athlete of having free play. Being able to go and just do stuff, fun, go outside, play recess, right? That stuff is also important as well. And so those are ways that we can quickly monitor of whether the athletes are doing too much, right? And within reason of how we can make other decisions. Now, if we happen to take a step back, there's also a systematic review by McLean and colleagues, and they found that across study after study, athletes who delayed specialization or played multiple sports had lower injury rates. So a separate meta-analysis found sport samplers, is what they called them, sport samplers. But basically, these were kids that played multiple sports, right? They just tried new things. Those kids had significantly lower injury risk than single sport specializers. And even in elite populations, there's a retrospective look back at the NFL athletes, and you've probably heard this on TV. I think they've probably talked about it a couple times, is that the NFL players that had played multiple sports in high school had different injuries. So like they were less likely to be injured and decrease injuries, but also their injuries weren't as significant, and they had longer career longevity profiles. So they played longer in the NFL than the guys that just specialized on the one sport. Now, from a nuance perspective here, the injury here that we want to talk about, specifically we're talking about injuries, are overuse injuries. Okay, there's a difference between overuse and acute. So the overuse, we're talking about things like tendinopathies, stress fractures, growth plate stuff, right? Things like that. Not necessarily like the acute traumatic things. We talk about someone rolling their ankle or tearing their ACL because they happen to get hit in the knee, right? Specialized kids weren't consistently at higher risk for acute injuries in the data of these researches that I've been research literature that I've been able to find. So when someone happens to say that specialization is going to cause increased risk of ACL tears, it's not necessarily true because those are usually contact injuries. However, you could also make the argument that if they're playing their sport more, right, that's obviously going to put them at more of a risk of potentially doing that, just because the injury risk of playing sport obviously is always going to be there. You can't make any risk happening. But if you're playing the sport more frequently, then you probably are likely to potentially tear an ACL if you happen to play something like soccer or football and get hit in the knee. So there is a little bit of a way that we could look at it from that perspective. But overall, when we're talking about injuries, we're talking about overuse injuries from specialization. And so from a bottom line perspective, we know that repetitive, high volume, single pattern loading on an immature growing athlete without enough variety or recovery for them is going to be the problem here. That is the problem of the specialization side. So specialization is just the most common delivery mechanism that these kids are getting this, is because they're doing all those things. That basically describes what happens when these kids specialize. Now, the argument that I find more persuasive and the one that gets less discussion, I guess, is the performance argument. Okay. Because even if you don't care about injuries, so even if you're the parent or the coach who thinks injuries are just a piece of the game, right, that the specialization still is not going to hold up here. Now, here's the promise that usually you're going to find from a parent perspective with the specialization side, is if you get a head start, you're going to get more reps than everybody else, and then that's going to make you better. And is the 10,000 hour idea here, basically Erickson's deliberate practice work that has been popularized to death, right? More focused reps earlier equals elite. However, the problem we have is when you actually study how elite athletes got elite, that mostly not the road that they end up taking to be able to do that. And so there's an idea here called the developmental model of sport participation, and it's going to be called Coates model. Now, it describes a sampling phase, so roughly ages 6 to 12, where Future elite athletes play a bunch of sports in playful, low-pressure way and then specialize later around 13 to 15. And a big body of retrospective research supports this way of going about this. Now, Gulledge and colleagues comparing world-class versus merely national-class athletes found that world-class group actually started their main sport later. They did more multi-sport practice and did less main sports practice over in their early years. So I want you to think about that again, that the better athletes specialized less early, not earlier. And so I'm sure you've probably heard this as well. Federer played a ton of sports before he played tennis. All right. The multi-sport greats all did this. But I will be honest here is that anecdotes are usually the weakest form of evidence of what we did, right? So cherry picking particular champions is something that I don't want to do to be able to prove my point. So I'm not resting this necessarily on somebody like Federer who played all those sports. I'm resting it on the pattern that we happen to see from the data and the retrospective study showing that sampling pathway is on average the more common road to the top when it comes to elite athletics. So getting them involved and trying new things and seeing what they like, what they dislike, and how that fits for their particular bodies. And here's where I also have to be honest about the limits of some of these things that we are finding is because it's going to open some things for us here. So the first thing we're going to talk about is going to be reverse causation. So maybe multi-sport kids don't become elite because they played multiple sports. Maybe the naturally gifted athletic kids are the ones who can succeed at multiple sports, so they happen to play multiple sports, and then they'd be elite anyways. Okay. The athlete might cause the multi-sport participation, not the reverse. It's a real conversation, something we have to actually consider. The second thing is also going to be survivorship. So we're studying the ones who made it all the way through. So we don't see the thousands of early specializers who flamed out and quit. They're not in the quote-unquote elite sample to be counted, so we stay humble about how clean the casual story is here. But with that all said, here's the point. Even with those two caveats, notice what the evidence is not supporting. There's basically no strong body of evidence whatsoever that early specialization reliably produces more elite athletes than a multi-sport than a special into that specialized path. So the best case for early specialization is roughly a wash on the performance side. Okay, it's going to basically nix itself out. And if it's a wash on the performance that comes with higher potential risk of overuse injury, more burnout, higher dropout rates, and obviously you're going to be spending more money if you're a parent, then as a bet, it's probably going to be a bad idea or a bad long-term investment. So you're paying more for the same and more than likely probably a worse outcome with more potential downside and risk. And so that's going to be the whole argument here. If I had to put everything for this long-term athletic development and, you know, the reason not to really specialize into a sentence, that's probably going to be it. Now, real exceptions exist, okay, and as a professional, I'm not going to pretend otherwise. The early entry sports, so we think about things like gymnastics, figure skating, diving, and you can even make, in some cases, women's tennis, where peak performance comes very young and the technical demands are so extreme that you usually need to start the sport a little bit earlier than other sports, typically. Those are real. They do exist. I'm not going to lie about that. But something I want you to notice is that most parents are grinding their 10-year-olds out in baseball, soccer, and basketball, and those are not those sports, right? They're basically taking the logic of gymnastics and trying to apply it to sports where it's not going to apply. All right, so let's enough of that side of it. So let's build into what we should be doing here. So if early narrow specialization is the wrong default answer, what's the right way that we go about this? And how do we, as a coach, deliver this to parents and athletes? And you have to be a parent listening. How can you implement this? So there's two things worth knowing. Obviously, one is going to be the long-term athletic development model, or the LTAD. We want those stages and how that all works. And then also the youth physical development model from Lloyd and Oliver. Those are the two most common ones. And here's an honest take on both of those, is that the big picture principles are excellent and the field broadly agrees on these approaches. But some specific claims, like having rigid windows of trainability, for example, the idea that you miss one magic chance to develop speed at age 9, those specific windows are actually not that supported and have been very criticized. So we want to use this sequence that we're going to talk about here. Not really worried about having certain ages do certain things more so than the other. And so here's the sequence that is supported by the research. Number one, we want to build broad movement competency first. Okay, we want to run. We want to teach them to jump and land, throw, catch, change direction, tumble, kick. Right? We want to have physical literacy in all those things. And so the kid who does a lot of those movements well has a much bigger base to specialize from whenever they do actually specialize later. Now, for young kids, multi-sport play is strength and conditioning. It's just disguised as fun. Okay, when they're that young and they're very, very young, they're getting strength, they're getting speed, they're getting conditioning, right? They're getting mobility, they're getting all that stuff. It's very fun. It's easy for them to do. Number two, and this is the one that my field particularly owns, is that appropriately programmed resistance training is safe, effective, and one of the best things that you can give a young athlete. Now, I want to be empathetic because parents are still scared of putting their kids in a good quality strength and conditioning program for whatever reason. But the 2014 International Consensus on Youth Resistance Training, so a big international panel that looks at all this stuff, they concluded that supervised, well-designed strength training does not damage growth plates, it does not stunt growth, it actually improves strength, motor control, and reduces injury risk. So the old thing that you hear about lifting being dangerous for kids, that myth has been dead, and it's been dead for a very long time. What's actually dangerous is unsupervised, max effort lifting with bad technique. Okay, that's not good for kids. So that's usually more of a supervision problem and a teaching problem, right? That's not a strength training problem, right? We don't just max out kids for no reason. Shouldn't be maxing out kids at all anyways. But obviously, the younger they are, we're not going to be doing that. And I do want to make sure that some of the strongest evidence that we have going towards this all says this as well, okay? So this is like a very clear thing that strength training is okay for kids. Number three, we want to manage the total load, not just the individual session. And so what I mean by this is where, as coaches, that we really earn our keep, that we are not the only thing loading this athlete, right? There's school, there's the PE side of it, there's team practices. Maybe they play for a second team. The tournaments that they have the weekend. Our job as coaches is to see the whole plate and try to figure out how what we do can balance on that. And so remember, we want to keep in mind the hours should always be underneath their age, and we want to make sure that we can do as much free play as possible. And really what we need to do, especially these ages too, is we need to build in a true off season. And so the single most evidence-based prescription in youth sports might be one of the most boring ones, and that's going to be to take time off. Kids need time off. So if you're a parent and you're listening to this, when was the last time your kid had a month off of no sports? I'm talking no sports, no baseball, no basketball, no softball, no swimming, right? They did no sports at all. They just got to be a kid for a whole month. When was the last time that happened? That's something that's very important. So the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends at least 1 to 2 days off per week from a given sport and at least 2 to 3 months off from that sport across the year. So that's how much time you want off. So if you happen to be a baseball player and you're playing year-round, you're not doing this, right? When September to December rolls around, you should take September, October, November, and December off, right? Or at least October, November, December off, right? Or November, December, January. Something like that where you're taking 2 to 3 months off. And you're not playing baseball anymore, right? You're playing basketball or you're doing some other kind of sport. And then the fourth thing here to talk about is that we want to individualize towards the athlete's maturation, not just their birthday because they magically turn 12, right? We can have two 13-year-olds and they can be literally 2 to 3 years apart from a biological perspective, how they look, how they act, the mental maturity. The early maturing kid is going to look like a stud at 12. And it might be nothing but the fact that they just got a growth spurt earlier than all the other kids, right? But that's going to go away by the time they turn 16, 17, and everybody else kind of catches up to the average. That's just the relative age effect and the maturation bias, and real and documented in all the research as well. So coaches, we do not want to confuse early with good, right? Some of your best future athletes are usually sometimes your late bloomers if the system doesn't cut them or burn them out. And so the way we go after this here is that we want to have a broad movement base. Let real strength training done right is completely okay. We watch the total amount of load of everything that's going on the athlete, not just the strength conditioning room, not just the practice and the tournaments, but everything is, you know, accounted for. We intentionally implement rest, both not only within the week, but also within the calendar year. And then we also actually coach the biological athlete that we're working with, not based upon their date of birth. That's going to give us a lot better job. Now, I will say, as a strength and conditioning professional, my program takes kids at 10, and we have that age mainly because it weeds out a lot of the mental immaturity, right? Once we realize that kids get to be 10, mental maturation is usually better than when it's not. Now, there obviously are 8-9-year-olds that are way more mentally mature than some of the 11-year-olds I've ever worked with in my life. But usually speaking, it's a good way for us to immediately figure out what kids are ready to take our program seriously. So that's up to you. But I would not just say that I only work with these particular groups, because they're all going to be a little bit different. Now, another thing that's worth discussing, since we actually talk about like a lot of coaching aspect of it as well from a strength and conditioning perspective, all of this is useless if we can't have the conversation with the parent, right? And they happen to be trying to pay us to do our job the best we can. And here's the tension that we generally see is that everything that I just explained can sound bad for our business. When we think about a strength and conditioning perspective, right? We want to have them play multiple sports, take months off, don't train year round. But you're probably thinking, aren't we telling families to spend less with us? And not really what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we want to change what we are selling, okay? How we go about this from a strength and conditioning perspective. So if we sell year-round single sports reps, then yeah, the science is going to be inconvenient in that perspective. But if we reposition this as the person who develops the complete, durable, long career athlete, the one still healthy and improving at 17 and 18 when the early specialization kids have quit or they're not together in one piece anymore because they've got shoulder issues or elbow issues or back issues, whatever. Now we know that this research is going to be our best marketing asset that we have as well. We become more of like a trusted advisor, not just another transaction. And so being a trusted advisor for many of these parents and these athletes can help us keep clients coming in the door for a long period of time from a business perspective as well. So practically, how do we as coaches talk to parents? So this is going to be more for the coaches here. Step number one is we want to agree with their goals and we want to redirect the method. Okay, so we never want to tell a parent that they're wrong to want their kid to be great at sports. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't know any parent that doesn't want their kid to be great at things they do. The thing that we want to try to convey is we want that your kid to be great as well. But here's what the research on elite athletes says is going to be the faster road to be able to get to that goal, the most efficient, right? We're trying to play for the same team here. We got the same goal. We're just trying to give them the correct roadmap and path to be able to do that. And then number two, we're going to use the money to reframe things. So parents respond to something called opportunity cost. So we could say you can spend 12 grand a year on the showcase circuit and all this team or whatever at 11. Or we happen to try to build durable athlete now, keep them playing multiple sports and trying new things as much as we possibly can, and we put our real specialization money, or the money we would put into that more so that 14, 15, 16-year-old range, when that's actually going to move the needle from a recruitment perspective. Most families are spending their money on specialization, you know, 5 years probably way too early, or they're spending it on the wrong thing entirely. Right? We spend a lot of money at like 11 years old. Recruiting doesn't even happen until they're 15 or 16. So like, what are we doing spending all that money playing all these travel ball things, right? It doesn't make any sense. The third thing, we want to give them the boundaries that are best to give them ideas to keep them educated. So our parents are not our enemies at the end of the day, right? They're just worried that their kid is going to fall behind all the other kids. That's what they really fear, is that their kid is going to be behind everybody, and then there's going to be no way they can keep up. So we want to hand them what the recommendations are, that, hey, they should be training less hours than their age. They should have a day or two off every single week. They need to have a real off season. They need to have real time off. And we want to make sure that they're always having a second sport available to them, right? If they play baseball, we want to make sure they're playing basketball, or they're running cross country, or they're playing tennis, right? Those are important things. So we're not going to try to take away the dream of the kid. We're trying to give them a safer approach to be able to go do that without feeling like their kid's going to fall behind as well, right? So we're actually giving them probably a more advanced way to truly get their kids somewhere, and hopefully helps to give them an edge compared to other kids at the end of the day. And the fourth thing, we want to be honest also about what we don't know, right? When we have parents push back, which you will have parents push back, they might say, I heard the early specialization is the only path towards my kid getting a scholarship. We don't want to come at them and say, well, the evidence actually doesn't support that for most sports, right? Or, and you know, I'll send you all the studies, and then you do send them studies, right? Nobody else in that parent's life is sending them peer-reviewed studies probably, okay? So we try to send them information or guide them into places. It's partially why I make these podcast episodes, be able to provide my customer base literally free education on stuff. This is literally free. You don't have to pay a single thing. I actually lose money on this stuff, okay? So I'm doing it to try to give them the best value for what they already get. And so we want to make sure that we become somebody that's trustworthy in their circle and in their kids' athletic endeavors and in their life. And sometimes the family is going to specialize anyway. Okay, it's going to happen. They're going to do the travel coach thing. The travel coach is going to get to them. They have peer pressure. They've sunk costs into it. It's going to happen. But our job is then going to shift towards harm reduction for this athlete. So if they're going to go all in on one sport, then we're making sure that there's obviously that we are understood as that we are a vital part of your specialization process. While I don't agree with it, if your kid is only going to play baseball, for example, or only play basketball at a very young age, strength and conditioning needs to be a part of that year-round approach as well, because the strength and conditioning can give the gaps and fill those things that they're probably not going to get. It's obviously going to get them stronger, it's going to keep them in condition, it's going to prepare their tissues right, try to keep them healthy. We're going to be able to help get them some load management, hopefully, in terms of like discussing like, hey, we're going to make sure that we're decreasing our eccentric work, right? If they've got a big, lengthy summer season, for example, right? We're going to decrease the eccentric work during the middle of the season and try to keep them moving. But we can also build up that eccentric strength before we go into season, right? There's ways that we can approach that. We also want to make sure we talk to them about rest, and that movement variety is built around that specialization to buffer the risk, right? So we don't want to get self-righteous and lose the athlete. So we want to make sure we keep them in their room to be able to try to protect the kid, and then give them also what they don't have, right? If we know that basketball, using the basketball, for example, is usually a winter sport, but we know that they'll do spring stuff, and then they'll also go play summer tournaments, right? We got to pick a time of year where we try to give them stuff they're not getting. Okay, whatever that might be, right? Whether that be small games and movement stuff, not everything has to look like the sport of basketball the weight room, and it shouldn't. So we want to make sure we give them stuff that maybe there's no carryover to them doing their sport, but it gives them movement variability, which they're not going to get if they don't do other sports. So think about med ball throws, for example. Doing scoop tosses and shot puts, probably not necessarily the most athletic thing for basketball, but if they're playing basketball year round, maybe we should have a month or two where we're actually working on truly rotational power because they're not getting it somewhere else in a different sport. Now, I want to leave this here with something that hopefully that as coaches you can use and parents you can use by a rough age by age approach. Now, these are just general recommendations, right? Maturations are going to the maturation age of the kid and athlete is going to dictate more of this than their actual age, but it's going to give you a place to start and think about things. So from roughly ages 6 to 9, these are the sampling years. The goal is going to be fun and working on fundamentals. We want to play as many sports as we possibly can, lots of free play, tons of movement variety is available. The formal quote unquote training is mostly when they play their actual games. Right, a six-year-old on a year-round, quote-unquote, elite anything is a big red flag and an issue that should not exist. We You also want to introduce body weight strength as play. So think about different crawling variations, jumping, landing, tumbling. Those kind of things are great for these ages. Once we actually move from 10 to 12, we still want to sample some, but now we're going to actually start to actually have structure. So we want to keep at least two sports going. So they're playing at least two sports. It's a great window to introduce actual quality strength conditioning training formally, but usually also allowing some play in there. So we focus on technique first, light loads, really coaching the athlete to try to move the best they can. We build the quality patterns, right? Our squat pattern, our hinge pattern, our push, pull, our carry, our brace, how to land, sprint mechanics. Don't need a ton of total training volume. We want to make sure that their hours are underneath their age here. This is usually when parents start to get a little crazy about all the things that they're doing. So let's just take a 10-year-old, for example. Let's say that they're playing baseball. Let's say that they have an hour and a half practice, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. Okay, that puts 4.5 hours. They come see me 1 hour a week on Wednesdays. So there's 5.5 hours. And then they play a tournament Friday, Saturday, with a potential of playing Sunday. So we'll say that they play 3 hours on the weekend, right? That's really close to getting over that hour. That's at like 8.5, 9 hours, potentially getting into 10. So you can see like how quickly, and some of these kids also, you got to think, that's not including their pitcher. They probably got pitching lessons. They're probably taking hitting lessons an hour a week, right? You can very quickly see how a 10-year-old immediately gets over those 10 hours without it being a whole lot. So definitely monitor those hours, especially this 10 to 12 range, because it's very, very easy for parents to get out of hand with it. All right. We got from the ages 13 to 15, this is going to be like your transition period. Specialization is actually going to start to make sense if the kid is one mentally driving it and wanting to do these things, and if they actually love it and love the process. I want to say love the process more than they love the sport. They love to go to practice. They love to train. They love to go hit. They love to pitch. They love to give shots up, right? They love to go outside and just shoot hoops, work on their craft by themselves. If a kid is doing that in these ages, now maybe specialization is worth considering. The strength training side of it is definitely going to progress. Training is going to get more quote-unquote sport specific. I hate that word, but it is going to be more tailored towards that ideal sport, right? Improve their basketball, for example, getting things that are going to improve their vertical, getting them shuffling laterally, right? We're going to focus on things that are going to have more potential carryover to that sport versus the training just being more general. But we still want an off season during this time, and ideally they should have some kind of second activity or sport if you can, if possible, get it to happen. And or manage it. And this is the peak growth period for majority of kids. So overuse issues and things like stress injuries are more likely to occur here because they are growing. It's not going to come from the strength training. It's going to come from doing too much sports stuff, too specific, too fast, and having those hours get out of hand. So this is something that you really want to monitor, that 13 to 15, maybe even 16 range. Now from roughly 16 degrees and up, now is when we actually want to specialize and actually bet on it, right? This is probably when it makes sense to put all your eggs in one basket, right? If you've done everything up to this point, we've built a good quality base, good foundation. We've built their engine, right? Their skeleton has actually probably matured a little bit more. They're probably starting to build some muscle. Their tendons are relatively strong. Their conditioning base is probably really good if they've been doing all these things. And they're just a bigger base to start from. So year-round, sport-specific, individualized programming would now, in my suggestion, be appropriate if it's for the kid. And this is when we take our serious strength and conditioning money and recruiting efforts, earn their return for our athletes here. And so I hope you can see the theme. At no point here did I say never specialize. We said specialize later and on a broader base that we can build from, with the eyes that we're trying to use here on the rest and the load. We're trying to figure out how to balance everything out. Give these kids an actual breather so their body can actually develop. And late specialization isn't that they don't have ambition to do this. It's actually the more ambitious plan because it's the one that's going to keep the kid healthy, in the game longer, actually developing, and hopefully actually give them a chance to blossom into that athlete rather than try to force them into that athlete and then hopefully you know, you don't want them to, but more than likely they're going to quit or burn out or get hurt, right? We don't want that. We want to set them up for the biggest amount of success in that 16 to 18 year old window. And so I also want to make sure that we give you an honest summary here of things that you can take away from. So something that I'm really confident about here with all this and the research as well is that youth resistance training and strength and conditioning performance training, when it's done right, it's very safe and beneficial. You probably need to get your kids in it if college athletics is something you're serious about or you're trying to go heavy into the travel ball or travel sports scene. We have strong, real evidence on this. Rested load management, reduce injury is going to help reduce the injury risk from that, but also the training is going to help them as well. There's a lot of strong evidence for this. This is something that you probably need to invest in if you're a parent. You know, I'm trying to say that unbiasedly as possible. Obviously, I'm a performance coach, but the research is just so incredibly strong on this to be able to help them do that if you're serious about them wanting to play in college or if they are serious about playing in college or making it to the next level. Something we're fairly confident about here is that early specialization is associated with more overuse injury and burnout, right? We're very, very confident about this for the most part. So there's solid observational base of what's happening here. The data seems to be there. It's consistent across multiple studies. It's all been done. But we just know that obviously those trials are not clearly really truly randomized because they can't be. So it's just a very strong association that early specialization is more likely to get kids injured. So that's why we don't want to do that. And some things that we're somewhat confident on, but they're still a little wishy-washy, is that multi-sport sampling is actually going to produce more elite athletes. Okay. The pattern of the data is going to point that direction, but it's also retrospective after the fact. And so we know with the reverse causation of the survivorship problem that we talked about earlier, it is something that is, well, we don't really know. It's kind of like the chicken and the egg, right? But what I will say very confidently about is that early specialization does not reliably produce any kind of better outcomes, okay? It's not necessarily that doing the multiple sports is going to actually make you better, but we just know that from the risk-reward perspective, the specialization is not going to give you better outcomes. That we do know. So the upside people that are paying for is probably not going to be there. You're better off just to do this, and it's going to save you some money in the long run. And the one thing that you've probably heard quite a bit of is that 70% of kids quit sports by 13. You also heard me say some numbers as well throughout this episode. But here's me actually practicing what I preach at the end of the day. Is it specific? That specific figure that 70% of kids quit sports by 13 is shakier than people admit. And it gets repeated constantly, but its original sourcing is thin, and some researchers have even pushed back on that kind of number. So the dropout problem, though, is real, all right? And we do know that the specific number that I say stop quoting on that 70% quit by 13, that's the difference between us and all the other stuff that you happen to be hearing out there, right? That I'm trying to give you ideally what we're finding from the research perspective, what I'm seeing working with kids and myself, and all that kind of stuff. So is the 70% by 13 quitting number factual? It's probably not really that accurate anymore. It's probably less, but it just sounds good, right? But we do know that a lot of kids are dropping out earlier. They're getting injured earlier. The injury risks are going up, right? We do know that those things are happening. So those are real things. I don't want to be too concerned about the exact numbers. Just make sure you understand that it's more than it should be, okay? And so here's our takeaway, is that development versus specialization is really not the argument that we're after here. The answer isn't going to be that you should never specialize. The correct approach is going to be that we develop athletes first. We specialize much later. And specialization has a period of time that matters, and it's later. And we want to do that on a nice, big, broad base and foundation, focusing on rest, having the quality strength conditioning built in, guided by someone who's actually in the strength and conditioning room, who's actually been around athletes, coaches that actually have the well-being of your child in place, if you happen to be a parent, have the kid's best interest in mind, who actually knows what the long-term athletic development model and the research says about multi-sport participation versus single-sport specialization. Our goal as coaches is to be that someone for these parents and these kids, for the athletes, for the families, you know, the kid that hopefully they can deserve a long youthful career, and they happen to go on to college, that's fantastic. If maybe the pros, whatever, more of them are not going to, but we want to be able to set them up for success, that if that's something they want to do, hopefully we can help them get there. Now, if this episode happened to help you out as a parent, coach, trainer, whatever, do me a favor. Again, share it with somebody. That always helps me out. Maybe share it with a parent who needs to hear this. That's how I'm trying to help improve the overall, not only sports specialization issue and keeping kids healthy, overall help our field, just overall get athletes to do the things the best they possibly can. So as I mentioned, the studies I talked about and whatever, those are going to be in the show notes below for you. So you can check those out if you want to dig a little bit deeper for them, or in the description if you happen to be listening or watching on YouTube. If you also happen to ever have a question or topic that you want me to cover, just leave it in the comment section below over on YouTube or over on where you're enjoying your podcast from, or you can also email it to me as well. The other thing I would also do is you can also message me over on Instagram at bsmitley. That's a place where you can get a hold of me as well, where I post all my lovely social media stuff. And you can also check out my free newsletter below, where I happen to send out, again, these podcast episodes. I send out some free stuff. I'll send out coupon codes for any kind of programs I'm working on. It's really, I'm not a person that bombards you with a bunch of newsletter crap. I only send, you know, 1 to 2 a week. It's nothing crazy. You can usually read them in 3 minutes or less. The really goal is for you to just take away one awesome thing every time you get content from me. So you can do that there. So hope this episode gave you more information to be able to pass on. And as always, I appreciate you tuning in for today's episode, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening to Thirst for More Podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at bsmitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.